and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight we have with us Dr. Ron Hunninghakee of the Reardon Clinic in Kansas, and we're going to talk about, among other things, holistic addiction solution and maybe some other topics in alternative medicine. How are you, Dr. Hunninghakee?
Good, Eva. Thank you very much. And you can just call me Dr. Ron. That's a little easier than Hunninghakee or Hunninghakee.
Thank you. So before we get started, could you just tell us a little bit about you and how you got started doing what you're doing and where we can find you?
I'm a family physician. Yeah, I'm a family physician. And all through medical school, I kept wondering, when are they going to talk about health? And they never really did. It's all about disease. And very often it's about making a diagnosis and using some conventional treatment, and it doesn't always go to the underlying causes. And so I had the good fortune of working in a family practice office where we offered a wellness program called WellPlan, and that led me to look deeper into what people could do to take better care of themselves. And I ran into Dr. Hugh Reardon, who was a holistic psychiatrist. Matter of fact, he's a past president of the American Holistic Medical Association. And so he invited me down to his clinic in Wichita, Kansas, where I sat in with him and began to see how he was exploring this question of what are the underlying causes of a person's chronic illness. And then he used the laboratory to follow up on his hunches and start making corrections of these underlying causes. And that led to people taking control of their lives and beginning to experience a higher level of health and well-being and correcting the underlying problems so that they could once again enjoy better health.
And where can people find you?
Well, if they go on the internet and Reardon Clinic, I'll spell it out because it's kind of not everyone knows how to spell Reardon, but it's RIORDANDANClinic.org, and it's an ORG because we're a nonprofit organization. Our charter is set up to where we do education, research, and innovative clinical care.
So the way I first met you was through the Alliance for Addiction Solutions, and you did a talk for us about holistic treatments for addiction and mood disorders. Could we start off talking about that a little bit?
Well, sure. That of course was how the Reardon Clinic got started back in 1975. Actually, leading up to that, a wealthy matriarch in Wichita, and I should say an entrepreneur, Mrs. Olive W. Garvey, took her family to their doctors after she had read a book called Nutrition and Mental Illness, and she asked for nutrient testing to be done. And the doctors that she went to had no idea what to measure, or if they did measure it, they had no idea of how to interpret in light of their illness. So she began to look for someone to work with her in starting a laboratory, and that's how the Reardon Clinic got started, as a laboratory where nutrient levels were measured. And so Dr. Reardon was the first doctor. Dr. Charles Henshaw was the first lab director. He's back again. He's our lab director now, and I encourage anyone who has questions about our laboratory to give us a call. You know, we're open Monday through Friday. It's 316-682-3100, and you can ask for one of our nurses to explain things to you in terms of how we work, or you can call down to the lab, and very often Charlie Henshaw is there, And he's 80 years old now, but he's totally committed to what we're doing and an incredible example of what good lifestyle care can do for a person. Anyway, Dr. Reardon began taking all of his toughest psychiatric cases, the mental illness cases, mood disorders, schizophrenia, depression, addiction, ADHD in kids, and running them through a very extensive laboratory analysis. And lo and behold, what many people would call a mental illness turned out to be a biochemical imbalance in many cases, or a food allergy, or a hormone imbalance, or a dysglycemia, like hypoglycemia, or some kind of insulin resistance, and or toxic disease, such as metal toxicity. And so once he had diagnosed these underlying causes and began correcting them, these very difficult-to-treat illnesses began to come under control. I won't say on their own, because the other big advance that I believe that Dr. Reardon made is he began referring to his patients as co-learners. And if you stop and think about that word, co-learners, first of all, it implies that the patient has to be actively involved first in the detective process, and then once some of these causes are identified, the patient has to begin to make changes, better choices in their lifestyle so that they can actually bring about the correction of these underlying abnormalities that are sustaining their illness. Dr. Reardon did not believe in the term chronic illness because it implies that once you got it, you'll always have it. He preferred the term sustained illness, that as long as the underlying cause was not identified and corrected, the illness would continue to persist. And to give the audience a very simple analogy of that, I grew up working in my dad's gas station, and so if people would come in with the oil light on, it wouldn't make any sense to give them a piece of black tape to cover up the oil light. Our job was to run them up on the car lift and examine the gaskets and look for why the oil was leaking out. What was going on that was causing them to have low oil? And so in a similar way, we do a very thorough kind of detective work where we involve each client in this investigative process to help them identify and take responsibility for underlying causes that can be corrected that will give rise to better health and better functioning.
Can you tell me, there's a big controversy. Can you hear me okay?
I sure can.
Okay. Can you tell me a little bit about lab testing? Because there's a big dispute going on about whether, certain lab tests actually have any validity to them. And I'd like for you to educate us a little bit, if you would. What do you mean when you say lab testing?
Sure. Well, the first level of, I guess you'd say, evidence that the lab is important and valid and useful is whether or not it's accurate. And because our lab started out working with Medicare, we are a CLIA laboratory, which means that every year we have a CLIA inspector come in and do a very thorough shakedown of our operation. And that means that we are sent specimens that we have to identify kind of independently. It's kind of like seeing whether or not what we're actually measuring really is the case. And so almost every year we have either zero or maybe one deficiency. The CLIA inspector is always very impressed with the accuracy of our lab testing. And Dr. Reardon was kind of a fanatic about this in the sense that he knew that because we were venturing into territory that conventional medicine typically did not go in, that there might be this kind of a objection that we were basically not measuring accurately. We do measure accurately. The big problem in my mind is how nutrient tests are interpreted. Most doctors have no training in nutrient testing. I did not have much of any when I went through University of Kansas back in 1973 to 76. And our son, who is now a third-year medical student, University of Kansas, he would basically agree that there's very limited training. Now, the doctors will get the basics of biochemistry, but it's pretty heavily geared towards pharmacology and not so much towards nutritional biochemistry. So big part of what I had to do when I joined the Reardon Clinic in 1989 was to go to conferences, spend time working under Dr. Reardon, and probably the biggest thing he did for me to help me learn this stuff was he had me give lectures on it once a month. We had a weekly lunch and lecture series, and so over the 23 years that I've been at the Reardon Clinic, I've probably given close to 500 lectures on nutrition, chronic illness, nutritional biochemistry, biochemical pathways, and how nutrition fits into those pathways, as well as seeing usually about 100 patients a week. And so all of this together has helped me to get a really good sense for how this testing can elucidate mysterious causes of chronic illness. They're not so mysterious, but there's an old saying in medical school that if you don't look, you won't find. And most doctors are not comfortable with looking at nutrient levels because they've been kind of brainwashed that nutrition and nutritional levels don't really correlate with anything. They do correlate, but they do not give you, they do not always give you a diagnosis. For example, when I do nutrient levels, I'm not just looking for scurvy. I'm trying to look for how vitamin C deficiency might be tied in with chronic allergies or how it may be a factor in chronic inflammation. So I'm looking at a number of underlying causes that are giving rise to what we call a causal loop. More often than not, it's not one thing. It may be two, three, four, five things that are interrelated and locked in together and keeping patients in a kind of downward spiral of health. And unfortunately, just to get a medical diagnosis and to be given a drug does not correct the underlying causes, and it, in many ways, it keeps the patient locked in their illness. It can help them relieve some symptoms, but it doesn't necessarily correct the functioning of their bodies and their physiology. So that's why we put such a heavy emphasis on identifying the causes, the underlying causes.
I've never been able to understand why people think, you know, we're natural things made of natural chemicals, and I've never been able to quite figure out how people think that something that's unnatural can fix a natural thing. So I'm so happy to hear you say that. So
yeah,
I
have a little story on that, and I think this is part of it. A lot of the people, probably you, I don't know, maybe some of our listeners have read Stephen Covey's wonderful book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And he has a big objection in that book to how higher education often works. And that is, you can go to college and take a course that maybe you're not that interested in and goof off the whole semester, and in the last couple days prior to the final, cram and pass the test and then purport to have learned something. Now, that's an artificial system. If you talk to a farmer and ask him whether or not he can goof off during the plowing season and the harrowing season and the planting and the fertilizing and the cultivation and weeding and all the different parts, the harvesting and the selling of the grain and all that, there's a tremendous amount of work that goes into raising a crop, which is a biological system. And humans are a biological system, and health has many different things involved in maintaining it, and yet so many people will, shall we say, goof off the whole semester of their lives and have a chronic illness emerge, and they'll go to the doctor, and the doctor will kind of bail them out. Here, just take this chemical, and you're going to feel better. Now, there are instances where medicines can be life-saving, and so I don't mean to say that they don't have their role, but for too many people, they kind of bail them out in a way, but in the meantime, they lose their opportunity to discover why they're having that illness in the first place. What are the underlying causes not just what can we do to get you through this acute episode. What are the things that are sustaining the chronicity of the illness? And so we try to get people to think biologically about their illness and correct those causes.
So I want to ask you just point blank, because people don't believe this. They think that AA is the only hope to getting rid of some kind of addiction, no matter what it is. And I want to ask you, is addiction curable?
Well, it depends upon how you look upon the word cure. I think addiction probably involves just about all facets of the human being. And when I talk to people about treating the underlying causes, we use a little acronym called Identify the Causes. And I probably won't even remember all of them, but things like nutrition, food choices, thyroid health, emotional well-being, structural issues, toxicity, inflammation, digestion, all these things come into play. And I think with addiction, if you think there's a simple cure, I think you're probably fooling yourself. Now, I think the biggest thing with addiction is that people have to have the intention to get well. And many times people, and what I usually do with people who come into me with an addiction is try to go back and find out, where did it start? What was going on when this addiction manifested itself in your life? And what are the behaviors, the lifestyle behaviors that are sustaining it? And what sort of dysfunctional relationships are at work here? And what sort of unrealistic expectations might you be having about yourself, your diet, your beliefs? So it's a very holistic disease, and it's curable, but I think it takes a significant amount of co-learnership on the part of both the patient and the doctor. And as far as there being quick fixes, I don't really think there is. But I do think that it is it can be helped if you identify these sustaining causes and begin to unhinge this loop that I'm talking about, because many times people are caught in a downward spiral and they have to make a choice to start making changes in their lifestyle, their beliefs, their nutrition, you name it. All these various underlying causes have to be addressed.
I guess the reason that I asked the question the way I did was I have a daughter who's 18. And when she was 15, she got raped, and nobody knew it, and she started using street drugs to self-medicate herself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I got involved with the Alliance for Addiction Solutions, and we started we did metal detoxing. We changed mm-hmm. her diet to a paleo diet. We put mm-hmm. her on Total Amino Solutions. We put her on Empower Plus, and she did it every day, and we did coffee enemas. And it's been 9 months now, and she says, Mom, I could care less if I ever see a drug again for the rest of my life. I just don't want it anymore. So fixing, changing her nutrition and fixing her brain chemistry healed her, as far as I'm concerned. And I just want people to know that there is hope.
You mentioned about 7 different things that are from the Identify the Causes acronym that I use. And she helped improve her brain chemistry with the amino acids, which is a nutritional intervention. She went on a paleo diet, which is very low glycemic and helps stabilize her blood sugar. She uses the Empower Plus, which gives her a wide range of nutrients that helps support her overall nutrition. You did the coffee enemas, which is an important detoxifier. You did the metal detoxification, which we oftentimes find is messing up the thyroid and the adrenal glands and making people less adaptive to stress. I assume that she maybe got a little more active in different things in her life. The structure of her life began to change, and she began to take more accountability, more responsibility. And probably the most important thing is maybe you, as her mother, continued to believe in her and not give up on her and to maintain that relationship even when it went through rocky times, and not to judge her, but to stick with her and try to help her through some of this stuff. So there's a lot of things that goes into the healing process. It's not a simple thing, but you can start to pick out the elements of healing that need to occur in order for the corrective steps to be taken. But the most important one is to have that intention to get well and to believe that you can.
So I'm looking at your website now, and there's an interesting article here called Vitamin Junk Science Sets Off Global Media Frenzy. Can you talk about that a little bit, please? Because I think it's a very good and a very informative article about nutrition.
Well, in general, it's just safe to say that there is an information war going on, and the idea that pharmaceutical interventions can solve all health problems or disease problems is being pretty severely challenged by a lot of people, and they're not going to take it lying down. And so there are elements of conventional medicine that are hostile towards any kind of a unconventional intervention, though I think what's happening, this is being led as part of a grassroots movement on the part of the general population to become more responsible for their health, because they watch the TV ads and they hear about the various medicines where about one-third of the ad has to do with the benefits of the medicine and the other two-thirds has to do with the potential side effects. And so people are saying, gee, what else can I do besides take a medicine? What else can help me make myself stronger? And so there is a lot of interest in natural therapies. So what's going to happen, though, is you're going to see a counterattack on the part of the powers that be, because there's no question the pharmaceutical company has been the most profitable company on the planet for a long time, or the most profitable sector for a long time. So they're not going to take it sitting down, so they're going to challenge things, and they're going to do it by using things like meta-analysis, which is a very poor way to evaluate nutrients, or they'll do single nutrient interventions and they'll say this is very weak. But nutrition was never meant to be a single nutrient intervention. I always use the example as if you send the quarterback out against the other football team by himself, he doesn't stand up very well, or if it's a really good quarterback with a peewee team against another NFL team, they're not going to do very good. And so then you really can't say that's a bad quarterback. You can say, though, that he didn't have a very good team. And so that's why when people come to our clinic, we don't just do one nutrient test. We try to test most, if not all, of the key nutrients, especially in a severely ill patient, because more often than not, we're able to identify significant gaps in their team. In addition, we look at hormonal imbalances, we look at toxic factors, we look at food sensitivities. We spend about an hour with each patient asking how this has affected their lives, what's gone on with their families. We do take a holistic approach, and so we're trying to work on many different causal fronts simultaneously. And it's very difficult to design a double-blind, placebo-controlled study that controls all of these variables simultaneously. So this is where the gold standard of modern medicine really doesn't quite work when you're talking about a chronic illness that's affecting an individual's life in a very profound way.
So let's talk about what you practice is called orthomolecular medicine, right? If
mm-hmm.
people want to look it up.
It's one of the names.
It's
varied over the years. Integrative medicine is commonly used. Alternative is being used less and less because it's becoming less alternative and becoming more integrated and complementary. But orthomolecular, the main reason we kind of like that name is because we try to use molecules that naturally occur in the body. This was a term that was developed by Linus Pauling. in an article that was published in Science back in the 70s, he talked about orthomolecular psychiatry, using molecules that help the brain to reestablish its normal functioning, as opposed to toxomolecular, which are chemicals that don't normally occur in the body that create a kind of imbalance or a kind of poisoning in order to correct another imbalance. Unfortunately, there's usually downstream side effects that you know, you can get a short-term benefit but a long-term regression in the overall health of the individual, especially if they get loaded up on too many medicines at the same time, polypharmacy.
So let's talk a little bit about inflammatory diseases, because I want people to understand no matter what you have, there is a way to get better. So let's talk some about maybe syndrome X and diabetes and heart disease, how these are inflammatory things, and some things that give people an idea of places to start, such as maybe, you know, magnesium and balance out your minerals and taurine, get your amino acids to support your heart to make it strong, and maybe things that you can do to support your blood sugar stabilities. What would people look towards to do that if they don't have a Dr. Ron in their neighborhood? And
well,
by the way,
you can get Dr. Ron.
Teleconference, don't you, that people can get on your listserv and listen to?
Yeah, we have a luncheon lecture at least once a month, sometimes twice a month, and they can get on our website and sign up, and they can actually watch the lecture and be a part of it no matter where they are in the world. So feel free to go to reardonclinic.org and sign up. They can also order, I wrote a little book called Inflammation, Arthritis, and Aging, which I would have just been satisfied if it had been left at the word inflammation, because we find inflammation plays into just about every chronic illness. And if not physically, very often people's lives are inflamed. They are trying to adapt to some kind of injury or illness or infection or stress that has overwhelmed their system. And more often than not, the inflammation itself is appropriate. I mean, the inflammation is why we as a species are still here, is we have a very good inflammatory system, almost too good. And what's happened in modern times is because of the modern diet, we now have the pro-inflammatory forces in the body now exceed the anti-inflammatory forces. You can think of inflammation as a sentinel or a guard, and it's got a little tripwire. And when we're injured or infected, the inflammatory system is triggered, and there's a lot of things that can trigger it. But what modern medicine has done is they have focused on the triggers, much like if you have a field of grass and it's really dried out, any kind of flame will start it on fire. But if you have a field of healthy grass, nice green grass that's nourished and watered and taken care of, that those same triggers, a same match, will not start a fire because it's a healthy field. In a similar way, a healthy body, if it's triggered by an infection, it will deal with it without going excessively in an inflammatory direction. And so one of the reasons we think this has happened is because our genes are set up to follow the ancestral diet, which is pretty high in protein. You know, we had hunter-gatherers as ancestors, so they emphasized protein and low glycemic, high fiber, low sugar, gatherable things like roots and berries and grasses and various things. And so it was only when agriculture came along that we started adding in grains, which have a higher omega-6. And so that started to disrupt the omega-6 to 3 ratio. And we no longer had a 1-to-1. We had more like a 5-to-1. And then with the industrial era, with the introduction of sugars and processed grains, the glycemic load went up. The fiber went down, the omega-6 to 3 ratio got worse, 10-to-1, and now we live in the fast food, convenience food era, where the omega-6 to 3 ratio is 20 to 1 or greater. The most people are eating less than about a third of their food from whole foods. Most of it is processed, refined foods to which have been added a lot of non-nutrients or anti-nutrients like trans fats and refined sugar and refined flour and grains. And so this has really disrupted the dietary regulation of the inflammatory system such that almost everyone that lives in modern times is in a hyper-inflammatory state, and all it takes is just any one of the triggers in our lives, whether it's an infection, an operation, an illness, a divorce, some kind of major event will oftentimes start that grass fire burning and flaming up, and it shows up as an autoimmune disease or a chronic fatigue syndrome or a migraine headache syndrome or a rheumatoid arthritis situation. So you can trace a lot of those back to very poor diets, inflammation of the digestive system, which causes food allergies, leaky gut syndrome. A lot of people have dental amalgams, which are 50% mercury, and that are constantly outgassing and causing the saliva to carry mercury and other metals down into the gut, which makes it even more inflamed, more leaky, more food allergies, more malabsorption, more dysbiosis or gut imbalances in the friendly bacteria, which affects the immune system, which makes you more prone to infection, which sets you up for all kinds of other problems, chronic viruses, Lyme, all the various bacterial infections, parasites. So it's all a huge kind of domino effect that people get themselves into, that they spiral downward in their health. And then all they have to do then when they're feeling lousy is start on some kind of an addictive drug, and pretty soon that starts wrapping into the whole thing, and it just goes down deeper and deeper. So it's, when it comes to untying that knot, it's not something you can do in one visit. It's more or less getting people enlisted as co-learners, getting them knowledgeable in what underlying causes are, getting them to make better food choices, identifying their food sensitivities, testing their nutrient levels so that we know where to start, so that they're not just taking a handful of just miscellaneous vitamins, you know, or something. You know, multi-level companies will tell you, just skip everything else and just take our product. What we like to do is do an analysis so we have objective evidence and we're starting from a point that is real for that patient. And then we can later on follow up on the testing so that we have objective verification that we really are moving in the right direction and not just spinning their wheels. So it's a very much a holistic process. It's not easy, but the results are very gratifying when people really get involved in the process.
Okay, I have two questions. I'll ask them both and you can answer them how you like. The first one is, most people think if you say you have inflammation problems, they think inflammation is, oh, I have a pus pocket on a sore or something. That's not what you're talking about, I don't believe. And secondly, all we hear nowadays is don't eat meat and don't eat eggs because of cholesterol issues. And I don't think that's the right thing either. People don't understand how important meat and eggs are, that it's not the cholesterol from the meat that's harming you, that it's something else. Can you talk about those two things, please?
Yeah.
Hello? Hello? So I think we have a technical difficulty with my guest. Don's going to try to get him back on the phone. But the problem is, it's not how much cholesterol, it's the ratios of the good cholesterols and the bad cholesterols. You have to have meat and proteins to make your amino acids, because amino acids are the foundation of who you are. They make everything, every cell, every ligament, every tendon, every bone that's in your body. Without those things, you're going to get sick and you're going to die eventually. And inflammation doesn't mean that you have a pus pocket. It means that you have high markers in your body that indicates that illness is going on the inside that you don't realize is there. And it's usually, you'll typically see lots of flabby fat. You'll have low energy. You may not be able to sleep. You'll have depression. And all of these things are inflammatory markers, not meaning a pocket of pus somewhere, but meaning that you have inflammation going on inside your body. Eggs are good for you. They may have high cholesterol, but they also have lecithin in them, which in itself is an emulsifier, and it emulsifies that cholesterol in your gallbladder. So you need these things. They're more good for you than they are bad. It's only when you add in the things of things that metabolize to simple sugars that cause the problems. You know, processed sugars such as bread and cakes and pastas. If you got to have some carbohydrate, eat potato. But make sure you have that piece of meat or that piece of chicken or fish on your plate every night because you need those things. And I had an email from a woman that was asking me about gum disease. I talk about how I had bad gum disease, and I take care of my teeth, I can promise you that. But I had really bad recessive gums. I'm not a doctor, I'm just a woman, so I'm just giving you information to whoever that woman is. What I did for my gums was I put food-grade hydrogen peroxide on my gums, but you must be careful not to swallow it because it can be just as dangerous as it is good for you. So I put that hydrogen peroxide on my gums every day, and it would burn really bad, but by the time you get it all over your gums, you start rinsing your mouth out. Then I took colloidal silver and powdered vitamin C and mixed it together in a paste about the consistency of toothpaste. And I wiped that on my gums every day, and I closed my lips until it dissolved. And then I bought a water pick, and I put some food-grade hydrogen peroxide. That's important. You get it at a health food store in the refrigerator. And I'd put a couple of drops of the peroxide in the water in the water pick, and I'd clean in between my teeth every day. And I did this for several months, and within 6 months, my gums had grown back. And the first question the dentist said, well, have your gums attached? And I said, well, you know, I don't know. Check and see. So he did. And my gums had indeed reattached to my teeth and grown back to just like they were when I was a kid. So that's what I did. You know, like I said, I'm not a doctor. I'm just giving information. But that's what I did, and my gums are now great and healthy. But the thing that caused that is candida. You have to get your gut straightened out, too, which means you need to stop eating processed sugars, which feed candida. Clean out your gut. Do coffee enemas. Take a good prebiotic and a probiotic. You might take some olive leaf extract, which helps keep the fungus down. And then you take good probiotics every day to keep your gut in check. You need to make sure that you have good poops when you go to the bathroom. If you don't, then you're not getting the waste out of your colon, and toxicity spills up and stretches out your colon, and you get leaky gut syndrome, which means that toxins leak through your gut wall into your system and make you feel bad. So, you know, taking a very good probiotic, especially if you've ever had any antibiotics. You know, be careful about taking antibiotics. If you're healthy, you know, vitamin C in large dosages, just short of bowel tolerance, is one of the best things that you could do. If I could only do one thing, if I only had one vitamin that I could take every day, it would be vitamin C, just short of bowel tolerance. So what you would do is
I guess I got lost.
Oh, good. I'm glad you're back. It's hard to talk when you don't, all by yourself, when you don't know what you're going to talk about.
Yeah.
So go ahead and pick up where you left off.
Well, I don't know where I left off at. We were talking about
what really is inflammation. It doesn't mean a pus pocket on a wound. It means something that's going on in your body. And we were talking about all you ever hear is don't eat meat and don't eat eggs because they have cholesterol. When really we need meat and eggs.
Yeah. Did you hear any of my discussion on that? I was talking right along here and didn't realize.
Away.
Okay. All right. Well, I've already rehearsed it now, so I know what to say. Well, basically, the whole meat issue comes down to the fact that meat nowadays, is not the same as what our ancestors, the genetic type of meat that our ancestors got. It was a meat that lived out in the wild and ate a variety of foods. And a lot, like, for example, with beef and red meat, these animals were eating a lot of grasses, or they were eating other animals that ate grasses. And so their tissues contained quite a bit more omega-3. Nowadays, the tissues of feedlot beef contains a lot of estrogen and a lot of growth hormone and a lot of antibiotics, because most feedlots employ veterinarians who are shooting them full of drugs to kind of keep them alive and fend off the stress of living in close quarters. Same thing with chickens. It's terrible what chickens have to go through, and they are growing so much bigger, so much faster because of these hormones that are and the antibiotics that are fed to them. And so, plus they're stressed, and there's all kinds of stress chemicals in their tissues. So I kind of encourage people to be careful about the meats that they eat and try to get free-range meats or organic meats, or make friends with a farmer who still grows some of his livestock in the wild or on the pastures, grass-fed, and they're going to be much healthier. But in general, the reason you need to think in terms of meat is that our ancestors were hunter-gatherers, and so we mostly get our amino acids from places like eggs. Eggs, 48% of the protein in an egg can be utilized directly for protein synthesis. In meats and fish, it's 32%, and in protein powders, it's only 16%. So people have to eat a lot of vegetable protein if they're going to even get close to that. And so, especially if they're under stress, they may need higher amounts of amino acids in order to make the neurochemistry that they need to cope with what's going on in their lives.
Could you talk a little bit? We've got about 15 minutes, 12 to 15 minutes. Could you talk a little bit about supplements? I think that's, and this is just my opinion, but I think that the forms of supplements are very controversial. You know, people go to Walmart and buy magnesium, and it turns out to be, you know, magnesium carbonate, which is about absorbable as, you know, rubbing a handful of sand on your arm and hoping it's going to absorb. So what is the importance of learning about the various forms that vitamins come in and the particle size that they are?
Well,
does that make sense?
I think you need to know your company. As you know, if you have a favorite company, you need to know who they are, what they stand for, how long they've been around, what kind of laboratories they use to test the content of their supplements, and the ability of the supplements to break down in the gut. We kind of, you know, of course, at our clinic, we have a small vitamin area, but what's in that area is what has survived the test of time. In other words, if we don't see an improvement in a person's blood level, if they come back low in magnesium, it doesn't matter which one we give them. There's a couple different forms that we use, but the key thing is their magnesium level improving? And that's once, now we're back to why testing is so important, because different companies will tell you their product is fine. Or maybe it is fine in the laboratory test, but how does it do in this biochemically unique individual who may have other types of issues going on with their digestive system? So you want to look and see whether or not it's being absorbed well in this particular patient, and that's where the laboratory testing really shines strong. And so people who say you don't need laboratory testing, it's an act of faith that they're hoping that the supplements that they're choosing really are being absorbed and being utilized properly. So I think from a medical point of view, nutritional medicine is better served by getting some kind of testing to verify that the gaps are being filled in properly by whatever company you're using.
If someone, do you do testing for people through the mail?
Yes, we do. Yeah, our laboratory is a reference lab, and we have developed kits so they can take these kits to their doctor's office and get things tested, or they can. There's various centers around the country that do use our laboratory, or they can, like I said, they can call in our number and talk to our lab, to Dr. Henshaw or to one of the nurses, and we are an open lab, so they can even pretty much order any test they want. There's a few tests that are not on that list, but if people want to do a magnesium level, a serum RBC magnesium level, that's available. We can send them the kit, and they can take it to their doctor or take it to a laboratory and have someone draw the blood, and we can do the test for them.
That's a great thing to know. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, something I was going to ask you. Oh, what about the importance of stomach acid and digestion?
Highly important. And we've got a major problem in this country because a lot of people have reflux, esophagitis, and gastritis. They eat poorly and they get an upset stomach. And so the commercials say just take Prilosec or just take Gaviscon or whatever. Take something to relieve the symptom. And the Prilosec, the proton pump inhibitors, are very effective at shutting down acid in the stomach. You can shut it down by 80 to 90%. And if there's no acid in your stomach, there's not going to be any burning. And if you do reflux, there's no acid in the content of your stomach to irritate the lining of your esophagus. So it seems to work very well for people. And even though the package insert says you shouldn't be on it any longer than about 6 to 8 weeks, most people are on it for years. And now we're reaping a whole crop of people with osteoporosis, other mineral deficiencies, B12 deficiency, because you need acid to activate intrinsic factor to absorb B12. You can't break down your protein properly, so you end up with an amino acid deficiency. You're more prone to infections because you don't have enough acid in your stomach, such as pneumonia. And so all these things are coming about because the drug companies have been so effective at getting people to use the proton pump inhibitors to shut down their acid, which is going to happen anyway when people are malnourished or if they're stressed or if they're aging. There's a lot of reasons why the acid goes away anyway. So they don't need another reason, such as a chronic medication, but that's what happens to a lot of people.
So do you recommend using hydrochloric acid supplements?
Yeah, we can use that. We usually use betaine hydrochloric acid.
That's beets, right? Comes from beets.
Right. And then I've also found that niacinamide, which is a non-flushing form of niacin, if you use that at every meal, that can improve your stomach acid production. Sometimes getting on a good probiotic and getting off of some of your medicines can really help a lot. There's a few people that zinc deficiency plays into this. So, again, a good analysis of what's going on can be very helpful.
So we've got 8 or 9 minutes, so I'd like to give you that time to talk about anything that you want to talk about that you feel is important that we've not talked about.
Well, I would just like for people to think about how they can build their health. I mean, we think about treating disease. And, of course, if you're sick, that's an important consideration. But I think more often than not, if people learn how to take better care of their health and practice daily habits of health building, they're going to be further ahead. Dr. Reard was big on the concept of reserves, you know, having adequate nutrient reserves, having a good family reserve. I guess you're, you know, maintaining good relationships in your family as best you can. Having good daily exercise habits, that's a kind of reserve. Financial reserves obviously are important for maintaining balance in your life. Getting an adequate amount of sleep is a kind of reserve. That's very important. You know, the Bible says, love thy neighbor as thyself. A lot of times people spend so much time looking out for others that they don't take care of themselves adequately. Now, I'm not saying to become narcissistic, but I think you need to at least give yourself 50% And because if you are ill or you're depleted, you have nothing left to give. You really can't help, and then you're going to be the person that's going to be drawing upon others to help you. So there's a balance issue here about how people allot their time and what they do to take better care of themselves. And so my little saying these days is that true health care reform is self-care reform. That if you take care of yourself better and in a reasonable, balanced way that does not, you know, interfere with your work, your family. Now, there's a certain tension that exists there because people are always going to have to make choices and set priorities. But if you make health a real priority, and I'm including in that spiritual health, emotional health, psychological health, cognitive health, physical health. All these different things are things that you have to get involved in. It doesn't have to be obtrusive. You know, a lot of people I know, you don't realize it, but they're just going about their health in a really quiet way. You don't have to go around telling everyone, you know, you're a health nut or make it uncomfortable for other people. But just in a quiet way, learn how to take better care of yourself and embody the ideals of optimal health. And because basically that's what I've tried to do in my life is I feel like I can't be a good healthy doctor or practice healthy medicine without somehow embodying some of those principles in my own day-to-day life. And there are things that I can always improve upon, and I'm always trying to learn new things. But that consciousness of being healthy in your day-to-day decisions and being respectful of others and treating others the way you would like to be treated, these are all very fundamental concepts in health that go beyond just which supplement you take or how many minutes of aerobic exercise you do or how many hours of sleep you get. It's actually kind of like a healthy attitude. If you make that attitude really key and put your attention on, your intention and attention on being healthy, then pretty soon things start to click.
So, but winding up here, I'd like to know what you think about, I think, and you know, and I'm just a woman, I'm not a doctor, but I think people should be very careful about taking individual supplements because each one requires cofactors, and they go hand in hand. They need each other to facilitate one another. So I'm wondering if it would be your position that somebody, the very first step would be, if you don't know anything else to do, take a very good quality multivitamin complex and a good quality multi-amino acid complex, that would be a good start.
Yeah,
I'm asking.
I think so.
You
I think so. Yeah, I agree. I think they're getting to be more naturopathic doctors. They're getting, you know, you can go to your local health food store and ask, who is the doctor in our area that is sending patients here? You know, and that would be a doctor who has opened up to nutritional therapies. And so sometimes having a working alliance with a doctor that you trust who's not so quick to prescribe a pharmaceutical and is a little more likely to think about the illness and what some of the underlying causes could be and helping guide you safely towards that. You know, I think that's a good idea, kind of a health coach type of doctor. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's a chiropractor. Sometimes there are certain nurses and nutritionists that have gotten into this. And so, I don't know, I think it's a good investment because very often we are, there's a concept called the bias of self-referencing. We are victims of our own field of reference, and so sometimes our knowledge base is not so great that we can actually make a good decision because we can't see exactly how it's affecting us, and that's why the lab is really helpful, because it's very objective. And so no matter what I think might be an underlying cause, I have to go to the lab and verify my hunches like a good scientist. And so that's the whole purpose of having objective testing, is to break out of that bias of self-referencing and start to expand your field of vision.
Well, I'd like to recommend everybody to go to your website, reardonclinic.org. Sign up for your, I guess you call it listserv, I don't know what you call it, so you can get involved in his monthly teleseminars. They're actually, I participated in one. It was actually an interactive teleconference, so you can ask questions. And
right, and plus we have a great newsletter, a new newsletter each month that you just download, no charge. It's called Health Hunters. It's for people who are hunting for ways to be healthier.
So check that out. And also on my webpage, which is www.evaher.com, if you click on my blog tab, and then on the right-hand side in little letters there it says Archives, I write for a magazine every other month, and there are lots of articles there that help educate you about how to identify symptoms early so that you'll know when it's coming and you can go and see your doctor, your holistic physician, or naturopath or whoever it is, and catch diseases before they get full-blown in your body. So thank you, Dr. Ron, for coming on. I hope you'll come back sometime because you're a wealth of information. And I
well, thank you for having me, Eva.
Applaud you for what you do because I know it's been probably a hard road to step outside the box like that.
Yes and no. It's also very gratifying. So, but, you know, you got to do what your heart tells you.
Thank you, and come back sometime. Good night.
All right, Eva. Thank you.